your chart. You'll have it out. If you look at your chart of kings and prophets, you can get that where you can see that. Let's see if we can color it here. We're at a point in 2 Kings chapter 23 where we're about to start three deportations. Babylonia has defeated Assyria. Assyria has fallen. Egypt tried to come to Assyria's aid, and Josiah, the king of Judah, tried to stop them, if you'll remember, in the battle of Megiddo, and he was killed, and Egypt went ahead and joined forces with Assyria, but they were defeated by Babylonia in the Battle of Carchemish. And so now Egypt is headed back home. If you pick up 2 Kings chapter 23, beginning in verse 31, let's pick up in verse 29. While Josiah was king, Pharaoh Necho, king of Egypt, went up to the Euphrates River to help the king of Assyria. King Josiah marched out to meet him in battle, but Necho faced him and killed him at Megiddo. Josiah's servants brought his body in a chariot from Megiddo to Jerusalem and buried him in his own tomb. And the people of the land took Jehoahaz, son of Josiah, and anointed him king, and made him king in the place of his father. And if you continue reading to the end of that chapter, you'll find out that Pharaoh Necho, while he had been defeated at Carchemish, I guess it's kind of the pecking order. He didn't just completely give up his control over Judah at that time, because he didn't like who the people had chosen to be put on the throne, Jehoahaz. And so after 3 months, then he comes to Judah and he deposes Jehoahaz, exiles him to Egypt. You can read that in the last few verses there, chapter 23. He put another of Josiah's sons on the throne, Eliakim, and he didn't like Eliakim's name, so he changed his name to Jehoiakim, and he will be the king, a puppet king, for 11 years. And now we're ready to begin the three deportations. We'll look at the first of the deportations. In 605, you can read about these three deportations, and I would recommend that if you don't mind marking in your Bible, that you go to 2 Kings chapter 23 and verse 36, and you write down first deportation in your Bible. You go to verse 8 and you write second deportation, and you go to verse 18 and you write third deportation. That would be chapter 23, verse 36, through chapter 24, verse 7, is the story of the first deportation. Chapter 24, verse 8, through 17, is the second deportation. And then chapter 24, verse 18, through the end of the book, the next chapter would be the end of it, is the third deportation. What we mean by deportation is that was the policy that the Babylonians had. It was a very effective policy. We've mentioned before that if someone were to overrun the United States of America and they wanted to make sure that there was no basis for rebellion anytime in the near future, then one of the effective ways to do that would be to come in and take out about two-thirds, three-fourths of the people and just select different people. Take them out of every community, take them to another country, put them in a house, take the people out of that house, bring them here, and put them in the house that had been vacated here. And if you were large enough that you were over a number of countries around the world who spoke different languages, then obviously you're going to have people who will speak one language as a neighbor to someone who speaks another language. Another language, has a different culture, serves a different God. And so it was really effective means of keeping down any prospects of rebellion for So now you will have Judah, the bulk of which, by the time Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, will come three different times, because the kings of Judah were pretty stubborn, and whenever they agreed to pay tribute to the king of Babylonia, then it wasn't very long until they would decide that they weren't going to pay tribute anymore, and so Nebuchadnezzar would come back, and he would take additional people the second time, and then he came back the third time. We'll look at each one of those some relatively briefly, and then we'll have a period, just keep the continuity going for you, then we'll have a period of 70 years that they'll be in captivity, and then they will begin a return. And when they have completed the return, then the Old Testament will come to a close. So you will have, we're almost through with the Old Testament. You've got obviously lots of prophets to lay back in there. We're trying to bring some of those prophets in. We'll look at one of them tonight in this first deportation. Let's pick up in chapter 23, verse 36. Jehoiakim was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned in Jerusalem 11 years, and he had a mother. And he did evil in the sight of the Lord. If you'll read, you can read the names there if you like that. Just as his fathers had done. During Jehoiakim's reign, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, invaded the land, and Jehoiakim became his vassal for 3 years. But then he changed his mind and rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar. The Lord sent Babylonian, Aramean, Moabite, Ammonite raiders against him. He sent them to destroy Judah. Notice who sent them. God did. In accordance with the word of the Lord proclaimed by his servants, the prophets. Surely these things happened to Judah according to the Lord's command in order to remove them from his presence because of the sins of Manasseh and all he had done, including the shedding of innocent blood, for he had filled Jerusalem with innocent blood, and the Lord was not willing to forgive. That's an interesting statement, isn't it? As for the other events in Jehoiakim's reign, all he did, are they not written in the book of the annals of the king of Judah? Jehoiakim rested with his fathers, and Jehoiachin, his son, succeeded him as king. And then it puts a footnote here. The king of Egypt did not march out from his own country again, because the king of Babylon had taken all his territory from the Wadi of Egypt to the Euphrates River. And so, Babylonia, while Babylonia didn't come and take Egypt, they took to the border of Egypt and cornered Egypt up and said, don't come back across this river again. And so, the king of Egypt, Pharaoh Necho, and his successor stayed in Egypt from that time on. Now, it, by the way, if you'd like to cross-reference your Bible, you can also cross-reference it with 2 Chronicles chapter 36. And you can go to 2 Chronicles 36 and you can read this same story that we just read, specifically verse 5 through 8, which would obviously be a little bit shorter version of it. And each place, when you go to 2 Chronicles chapter 36, you can also find these three deportations. It'll be in a more abbreviated form. Remember, Kings and Chronicles tell about the same period of history. Now, if you would, for the remainder of our lesson this evening, turn to Daniel. Daniel. And if I can go back, you'll notice Daniel right here. And you notice something about Daniel's timeline. It goes way over here. Now these deportations, if you'll go back and look, these deportations, three deportations, are going to take place right here at this time period. You can write those down if you'd like to. You can find the date that we had for, we will have for each one of them. The first one is 605. And so if you'd like to find 605 in your Bible right here, you can make a little notation here or up here somewhere. And put first deportation. That'll give you a quick view of where you can go to find that information. In Daniel chapter 1, remember we just read that Nebuchadnezzar came. And you'll find a little bit more detail there in Chronicles. It'll talk about that he took some of the very elite of the land in that first deportation. Daniel chapter 1, beginning in verse 1, the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah. So we've got our timeline, right? You can look at your chart and see it. king of Babylon came to Jerusalem and besieged it. The Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand, along with some of the articles of the temple of God. These he carried off to the temple of his God in Babylonia and put them in the treasure house of his God. Then the king ordered Aspenaz, chief of his court officials, to bring in some of the Israelites from the royal family and nobility, young men without any physical defect, handsome, showing aptitude for every kind of learning, well-informed, quick to understand, qualified to serve in the king's palace. He was to teach them the language and literature of the Babylonians. The king assigned them a daily amount of food and wine from the king's table. They were to be trained for 3 years, and after that, they were to enter into the king's service. And so, it goes on in chapters, in verses 6 and 7, it says that he also, there were three friends who came with him. And so, as Nebuchadnezzar comes to Judah and he takes captives away, then among the captives will be a young boy by the name of Daniel. Daniel will be a really young man. We don't know how old he is, but it'll be obvious when we get through that he was pretty young. And in Daniel chapter 2, you'll remember these stories. Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. Nobody could interpret it. Daniel interpreted the dream. And as a result, Nebuchadnezzar elevated him to a position of extreme power in the whole Babylonian Empire. Chapter 2, verse 48, then the king placed Daniel in a high position and lavished many gifts on him. He made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon and placed him in charge of all the wise men. Now, there were some of the prophets who will serve under what I would call dire circumstances. But it just so happens that Daniel is not one of them. Daniel is going to serve as a very wealthy person. I mean, I would assume that if the king, the greatest king that existed at that time, he says that he gave him many gifts and he lavished many gifts on him, made him ruler over the entire province of Babylon, then he probably, we would say, he was probably a multi-millionaire. And he lived in a fine place. He ate the kind of food he wanted to. He wore the clothes that he wanted to. He had the newest cars. He had everything available to him. And it's going to be true that for this period of time, we're going to see when we get right down here that it's going to happen to him again in another similar way, that he's going to be reinstalled later in his life. And then it's going to happen a third time. We're going to see it even after the Babylonians have fallen. But Daniel will live through 70 years of captivity. Now let's stop just a minute and make some kind of an assumption here. If we can assume at this point, whenever the first deportation, he was old enough to have distinguished himself in some way to be exceptionally bright. Right? I mean, he had taken the whatever, ACT, whatever, what, in school, he was really, really high. He was just shown himself to be exceptionally bright. Enough that he was picked from the entire nation as one of the very few young men. And so, let's give him an age. Let's say he's, you give him one, 10 years old, 15 years old? I don't know. Let's say somewhere in that framework. And we can't make him too old because he's going to live through 70 years of captivity here. And he's still going to be functional when we get to the end of it. And it's pretty important that you understand that because we're going to draw a point here in just a few moments about that. He lived through 70 years of captivity and he saw the fall of Babylonia. And that incident is related in Daniel chapter 5. You'll turn over there. Set the stage, it says King Belshazzar gave a great banquet. Now, if you'll look up Kings in your history account, you'll find out that at this particular time, at the very last part of the days of the reign of Babylonia, the king was actually Nabonidus. But Nabonidus was a globetrotter. And he liked to accumulate And he had plenty of money, and nobody was threatening him, and so he could be he could travel as much as he wanted to. And so he turned the reins of taking care of the kingdom over to his son, Belshazzar. So you actually have a co-regency at this time. Nabonidus was actually the king, but he turned the reins of governing the empire of Babylonia over to his son, Belshazzar. Well, he's trotting the globe, and he, in the process of all of his travels, he becomes enamored with religion, and he brings all kinds of foreign religions to Babylonia, foreign to Babylonian culture. And Marduk was the primary god of the Babylonians, and he was bringing other religious temples and establishing them and funding them for this empire. And Marduk priests didn't like it, and they had lots of power. And so they did not like what Nabonidus was doing, and that's going to play a role in why Babylonia fell so easily when it did fall. But he's out somewhere, you know, he's taking a 747 somewhere around the world, and he's checking some site, checking out some religion. And his son, meanwhile, who inherited millions of dollars, is having a blast running the kingdom. And so the stage is set. Belshazzar gave a great banquet for 1,000 of his nobles and drank wine with them. While Belshazzar was drinking his wine, he gave orders to bring in the gold and silver goblets that Nebuchadnezzar, his father, had taken from the temple in Jerusalem. We just read about that, didn't we? So that the king and his nobles, his wives, his concubines might drink from them. And this is the straw that broke the camel's back. So they brought in the gold goblets that had been taken from the temple of God in Jerusalem. The kings and his nobles, wives, concubines drank from them. As they drank the wine, they praised the gods of gold, silver, bronze, iron, wood, and stone. Suddenly, the fingers of a man's hand appeared and wrote on the plaster of the wall near the lampstand in the royal palace. The king watched the hand as it wrote. Now, he's three sheets to the wind, okay? But he's not so gone that he doesn't see what's going on here. His face turned pale, and he was so frightened that his knees knocked together and his legs gave way. I can understand that, can't you? If all of a sudden, while we were having this party, the fingers of a man's hand appeared right over here, and they started writing on this wall right over here. That'd get your attention, wouldn't it? And so he just collapsed. He called out for the enchanters, and when he got through writing, he called all his wise people, and he said, hey, anybody that reads this writing and interprets it will be clothed in purple, have a gold chain placed around his neck, and be made third highest ruler in the kingdom. Well, there wasn't anybody found. Could, except one. The queen came in and said, hey, I recall that there was a person who could interpret dreams. I heard about this. And so they searched and they found Daniel, and Daniel again came. And he had done this for his predecessor, Nebuchadnezzar. And so he said, you know, I don't have this ability to do this. I'm not any wiser than anybody else. But there's a God in heaven who can. And so he told him. He said, and note verse 23. I'm in Daniel chapter 5, verse 23. Instead, you set yourself up against the Lord of heaven. You had the goblets of this temple brought into you. You, your nobles, your wives, your concubines drank wine from them. You praised the gods of silver, gold, bronze, iron, wood, stone, which cannot see, hear, nor understand. But you did not honor the God who, catch this, holds in his hand your life and all your ways. That's worth you noting there. And he says, so here's what was written. And what was written was three words. And translated, they say, numbered, weighed, divided. That's what the three words translate. And he says, your days have been numbered. You've been weighed in the balances and found wanting. And your empire is going to be given to another. Specifically, he told him who it was. verse 30. It's read 30 and 31. It's a really short synopsis of an incredible night. That very night, Belshazzar, king of the Babylonians, was slain. And Darius the Mede took over the kingdom at the age of 62. Now, there we don't know for sure what happened that night, but at the very time that this impious feast was taking place, the Persian army was outside the walls of the city. And at least some historians record that they didn't even have to fight to get into the city, because these priests of Marduk were so angry about what Nabonidus, the king, was doing that they went and opened the city gates and just let the Persians in. And interestingly, the Persians, wherever they went, were accepted and celebrated as liberators, because they had a completely different policy than did the Babylonians. The Babylonians had a policy of deportation, taking people away. The Persians had exactly the opposite policy. They said, hey, a kingdom can be ruled a lot more effectively if people are happy. And so they said, everybody, not just the Jews, the Old Testament's the story of what happened to the Jews. But they said everybody that's been deported can go home. And we will help pay your way. We'll buy your train ticket to go home. And we'll even help you rebuild when you get there. And we'll write letters so that wherever you go in the empire, that you can reestablish yourself and reestablish your religion. And in that policy, within that policy, was the Jews. We'll see that God worked in their lives so that they got to go home. Now, look at chapter 6, and I'm going to end here. Here's one of the more famous stories in the entire Bible, Daniel and the lion's den. And you know the story. Let's just put it in its historical context. It pleased Darius to appoint 120 satraps, I'm in the sixth one, to rule throughout the kingdom with three administrators over them, one of whom was Daniel. Then it says the satraps were made accountable to them so the king might not suffer loss. Now Daniel so distinguished himself among the administrators and the satraps by his exceptional qualities that the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Here we are. You tell me how old he is. Did we say he was 10 or 15 years old here? 70 years passed. He's 80 plus years old. Right here. 80 plus years old. And he is once again about, he's been elevated to one of the three top people in the kingdom, and he's about to be elevated to position number two. And then the story of these other administrators got together, and they were jealous, and they said, hey, we've got to stop this somehow. We can't let this Jewish guy come over us. We become subservient to him. And so they went to the king, they appealed to his pride. They said, hey, we've come up with this thing that we think you'll like. We want you to make a law that anybody that prays to anything or anyone for the next 30 days will be killed. And so he said, that sounds good to me. And of course, you know the story. They went up, and they knew that Daniel would be praying. They went up at the hour of prayer, and there he was praying. They came to the king. They reported it. The king tried to back out of what he had said, but he couldn't back out. And so they took Daniel and they threw him in a lion's den. And they put a big seal over it. The king sealed it with his rings, and all these satraps sealed it with their rings. And the king didn't sleep that night. The next morning he came and he had the seal removed. And he said, Daniel, was your God able to save you? And he said, O king, say that God sent his angel and he closed the mouth of the lions and I'm not harmed. And so they had him brought out and he was perfectly fine. And so the king took that opportunity to take all of these men and their wives and their children and throw them all into the lion's den that had set him up. And it said before they even hit the bottom, still in control. Next time, Lord willing, we'll pick up there with the second deportation.